Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hi, this is KYW's Dave Uram with another Philly Sports Playback. On this date, 33 years ago today, May 28th, 1987, J.J. Daigneau shook the spectrum. Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final against the Edmonton Oilers. Flyers are down 3-2 in the series. Brian Propp ties the game late, and then Daigneau fires one from the point, somehow goes into the net. Flyers take the lead. The spectrum goes wild. They win the game, and they force a Game 7 in that epic series. On May 14th, I spoke with Dave Poulin and Brad Marsh. You've heard them in past episodes. Last Monday, May 18th, I talked to Mark Howe. And last Tuesday, May 19th, Dave Brown. You'll hear from all four of them on that memorable night in South Philadelphia. First up, Hockey Hall of Famer, his number two's in the rafters at Wells Fargo, Mark Howe. The 87 playoffs were very grueling. You had a six-game series against the Rangers, seven-gamer against the Islanders, and then that six-gamer against Montreal, which ended with that crazy brawl before the clincher. How much do you think the grueling playoff stretch leading up to the Cup Final affected those first four games against Edmonton in 87?
I don't know. I think every team that by the time you get to the finals, all the teams are beat up, and some maybe just a little bit more than others. I know, you know, Timmy was out and hurt. I mean, Dave Poulin, actually the 2 years we went to the finals, Dave Poulin had busted ribs, and I had my own issues with different things, but I'd be in there and I'd watch, and they had this crazy needle that they'd find a way to, like, I thought it was going to go halfway through his body, but he had to get a block done for every single game that he played, and we use him primarily just for killing penalties and trying to take faceoffs. When anybody tries to do that with broken ribs and with torn cartilage in between, it's very painful. And so, like I said, those are the things you do. The guys step up, and I think the Oilers had a little easier path than we did, but still, they're still there. They're giving it and all. And, it definitely takes a toll. I think by the time you got to Game 7 in the series, through the first six games, there's so much emotion, so much adrenaline. I think by Game 7, the Oilers if you look at the last two periods, the guy was recalling to me that I think we only had a combined 8 shots. My recollection was it was like being in the middle of a tsunami, where it was just wave after wave after wave, and I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, the greatness of their team, and also with like the fatigue level, where you're giving it your all, you're into everything you could possibly do, you're just scraping for every ounce of energy, but I think the toll of going a full 2 months, and like I said, back then you used to play. You used to play 4 games in 5 nights to start a series. So there was no day off in between. You got rocking and rolling, and then you kick in overtime games. And, yeah, it takes its toll after 2 months.
Well, you guys definitely made it a series against Edmonton in 87. You know, after game 4, you're down 3-1. And, Mark, I remember seeing an interview of you in a Flyers history video where you're talking about how you noticed in the newspaper leading up to Game 5 that they had the parade scheduled already in the newspaper. How did that sit with some guys on the team, including yourself?
Yeah, well, it wasn't me who noticed it, because I was never one to read newspapers. I didn't agree with it. So, they can write good about you, and they can write bad about you, and I just prefer to I enjoyed the beat writers and reporters that covered our team, and I liked them as people. So I said it was no sense to me reading a bad article about myself when I knew I was already bad anyway, and that way you could remain friends with those people. But I believe it was Mike Keenan came in and said, "Well, I hope you guys have read the paper today." And he said, "Well, I guess I got the parade for tomorrow." And what it does, it just adds a little bit more fuel to your fire. So, I think our goal, I said, hey, like, we're going to give it what we got, and we do not want that parade going on tomorrow. That we're going to squash all that. We're going to rain on their parade and make it ugly as possible. And somehow we found a way to win. And, then we got back home for game six and which was, I think, memorable for a lot of guys who played on those teams in the mid 80s. It was quite a memorable game for all of us and anybody who happened to be at the game.
And that just led me right to my next thing. May 28th, 1987, game six at the Spectrum, Mark, which it's also your birthday, 65 this year. Happy 65th birthday. Another comeback in that game against Edmonton, as you came back in game five, you came back in game six as well. Brian Propp tied it. And then what you alluded to, J.J. Daniels' electric goal late in that game. Mark, what was it like to be in the Spectrum during that goal?
Well, for my 10 years and playing as a Flyer, without a doubt, that was the most electrifying goal time that I was ever a part of as a Flyer over those 10 years. And I remember sitting, JJ scored, and of course everybody's going crazy. We're sitting on the bench, we're all going crazy, but I mean the bench was vibrating. I mean, I remember actually looking up at the roof, and I said, "Well, I said, I wonder if this thing's going to cave in today." So, it was just as loud as an ovation, and that building actually shook. I mean, I know it was vibrating. You could feel it. So, it was so electrifying just to be a part of it. And I always said, because I was on the ice and I made a change maybe 30 seconds before that, and JJ came on the ice to replace me. So I said it was the best line change I ever had in my career. So, we were doing a call the other day, and Brad Marsh had set it up with a bunch of the alumni, and we were recalling that series, and actually J.J. Daniel was on there for a little bit. J.J. put a little twist on it, said he had been out there, did his, 30-second shift. He was coming to the bench for a line change, and Mike Keenan said, no, get back out there, stay on the ice, because Mike was trying to stay with some matchups that we had. And so J.J. had come all the way to the bench, and then they said, no, well, then he went back in the offensive zone. Well, because the play had been in their zone for a little while. Normally, as a defenseman, you try to keep the gap closed, and JJ would have already been there. But because of the circumstances, he arrived there late, but he arrived there just as the puck was just about to exit the zone. And he got a lot of wood on it, and Scott Mellenby was screening, and the puck went in the net. And, like I said, for the people that were part of a lot of those games in the 80s, mid-80s, I mean, that has to be the highlight of a lot of people's experiences as watching Flyer games, for sure.
You can certainly hear it and see it when you see the highlight of it. The place is just going absolutely nuts. You know, Mark, being that May 28th is your birthday, is there any good story about your birthday after that game as you guys tied that series up 3-3?
No. Well, like, the one thing you learn as a hockey player is dates, birthdays, anniversaries, none of it mean anything because, as part of your schedule, I mean, you're able to enjoy different things, and you run a lot of your schedule in the summertime. But in the wintertime, your whole life revolves around your hockey schedule and what you do every day. So you forgo anniversaries, you forgo this and that, and so but the nice part about it is when you do get time to your own and with your family and your spouse and all that, that's you make those days special, because those are the ones that, instead of having a happy birthday or happy this or happy that, that's those are the days you celebrate. So yeah, so as far as being a birthday, I was just glad. I knew every year that we were going to have a successful year if we were actually playing hockey on my birthday. So I know I know the last year I played as a player with the Detroit Red Wings, in order for me to make it to be a player at the age of 40, we had to go to the Stanley Cup Finals. Well, we made it to the finals that year, too. So we ended up playing a game on my 40th birthday in the 1995 playoffs. So that was so, like I said, that's what I look for. As long as we were playing hockey on my birthday, it was a really good year.
Last one for you I have for you, Mark, is 30-plus years later, your Flyer teams of the mid-'80s are still so revered and so popular, even though you guys fell just short, a game short in 87, a few games short in 85. Mark, how often do people come up to you in public and talk about those thrilling runs in the mid-'80s?
Not much. I mean, I guess in conversation, you talk about it, and the people always say the same thing. It's like, wow, how great it was. We loved your team, and I think what the people liked about it is we were, I think Philly's a blue-collar town. I think we're a blue-collar team. I think we had some underrated player. We had a little bit more talent, I think, than some people had. We didn't have the elite Gretzky's and Messier's and Paul Coffey's, but we had the Kerrs, the Props, the Poulins, the Tocchet was starting to emerge, Pelle Eklund, Sinisalo, and the Brad McCrimmons, we had the goalies. So we had a lot of talent, but, and you can ask all those players that played on those teams, the Crossmans, the Sutters, the Lindsey Carson's, whenever we run into each other and we talk and we converse. And for a lot of those guys, including myself, those were the favorite times of their hockey playing careers. So I know it was with me. We had a great team. I run into Dave Brown quite a bit and see guys like Al Hill and stuff. And those were the favorite times of our careers because the teams were close. The egos weren't there. We all bought in together, and it's memorable for what we did on the ice, but it's also memorable for what we did as a group of guys that came together, and we'll be lifelong friends.
That was Flyers legend Mark Howe on J.J. Daniels' exciting goal. Here's former captain Dave Poulin. On to the Cup Finals, Dave. You're down 3-1 to Edmonton. You're going back there for Game 5, and I heard and I saw that you guys, going into that game, noticed in the newspaper that they had the parade scheduled, even though they hadn't won the series yet. Is that true from what you can recollect, and how much of an effect did that have on you guys forcing a Game 6?
In my memory, Dave, the parade route was actually printed in the paper. And
wow.
That's the way I recall it. And, and I thought, I had never watched that series. And last week I watched, it was on in Canada, and they actually played it on the same nights that they had played the 7-game series. So we've been getting a lot of airtime up here lately, trust me. I had never watched it. So I had never watched a second of those games. And I watched Game 5 and I watched Game 7. And in Game 5, we were down in every game in that series. We were down by a couple goals. We were down 2-0, 3-1. And that was back to our whole makeup. It just didn't matter. And once again, we had a goalie that we knew was capable of stealing the show. And he did, but Grant Fuhr was really good too. And so it wasn't, it was just maybe some guys used the parade route to their advantage, or maybe the story grew in lore afterwards. That's often the case. I just remember it being physically, mentally, every bit of it was so demanding. And that was in 2-2, 1-1-1. So we were going back and forth to Edmonton every second day.
Huh.
And, it was quite crazy. And, red eye flights coming back and getting back at 5 or 6 in the morning, and then the days between games. And so you're in survival mode at that point. That year, I believe we played 26 games in 53 nights. And, which is crazy. I mean, we look at sports science today, they'd laugh at it. They'd say, well, there's no way we can do that. load management and everything else that goes on in pro sports today. But we did. We were a tough, tough mental mental team. Like, from a mentally made-up standpoint, we were a team.
I'm fascinated by something you just said about how you've never watched the games before until recently when it was on TV. Is there any reason behind that, any particular reason, because it's too difficult to watch that series knowing how close you came, or is it just the way that turned out?
Yeah, I've had opportunities to, Dave, and chosen not to. And, you know, it's until, like, I probably went 20-plus years after I played before I watched a post-game championship celebration in any sport. It didn't matter. The Super Bowl, Major League Baseball. I'm a huge sports fan. And, you know, and I've been to World Series games. I've been to the NBA Finals games. I've seen pretty much everything. And I've never left the TV on or stayed for the championship celebration. So I don't know whether that's my own little, you know, pet peeve at not having my own, or because in the three times I lost in the finals, I lost again in 90 to Edmonton. You stayed on the ice when the other team was awarded the cup. You stood at the other end of the ice. And a couple of years back, Rick Tockett and I remained close. And when Tockett won the cup with Pittsburgh, he called me and he said, "Hey, I'm going to bring the cup up to my parents, who I knew well in Toronto." He said, "Do you want to come over?" And I laughed and I said, "You just need somebody to stand at the other end of the backyard and watch or what?" So, we laughed about it, and I didn't go. And you know, I've still never touched the cup, or, you know, and I likely won't now. But it was something, you took such a great deal of pride in getting there, and you never got to celebrate the final moment.
Well, you should also take a great deal of pride in this next game, this game six, May 28th, 1987, a game that remains in Flyers fans' hearts for a lot of reason, Dave. And the main reason is the comeback. Brian Propp ties it, and then J.J. Daigneault, his first postseason goal, 5.5 minutes left, just a laser, and the spectrum goes crazy. What was it like to be in the building after J.J. scored?
Well, I think it was the loudest I ever heard the building, and I think, you know, I've watched that now in the Zoom call we had with Brad Marsh and the alumni last week. So I've seen that goal again now, which I hadn't seen until that point as well. But I remembered it pretty well in the way it happened. JJ had come to the bench to change and Keenan had shooed him back on the ice, hence his late getting the blue line. But I just think about the building itself and the huge home ice advantage that the Philadelphia Spectrum was for the Philadelphia Flyers. And, you know, years later, guys talk about going into that building and the vertical nature of the building. It was a really small footprint. And, you know, years later when it was still existing and the new buildings were all built there, new baseball, new football, new hockey, and the Spectrum was still standing, you saw how small it was. It was a tiny, tiny building. But inside it was vertical. And it seemed to go straight up, and it seemed like the people were right on top of you. And I just thought it was just the best home ice advantage. And when that place got rocking, it was louder than every place else because it was closer than every place else. Probably the Chicago Stadium and the Boston Garden would be the only two that would rival it in terms of pure noise. And I don't think in my time I heard it louder than that goal. But that goal was taking us to game seven of the Stanley Cup Finals. Now, we still had some hockey left to play, but in fans' mind, they associate that goal with we're going to game seven.
You came so close in game seven. You took the lead 1-0 early. The first time in the series that you guys scored the first goal in a game, because as you said, you were playing from behind the whole time. But, and even though Hextall stood on his head the whole game, Edmonton won 3-1. They won the cup. You guys fell just short. Dave, even though you guys fell just short twice to Edmonton, those really good Oiler teams, the 80 Flyers are still revered by the fans. They're still really popular teams. And you guys were really good. You know, one year you had the most points in the league. Pelle Lindberg, Ron Hextall, they played out of their mind. You guys were a good team. When you look back on that time, despite not winning it at all, what do you recollect? What do you reminisce on when you think of that era of mid-'80s, late-'80s Flyers hockey?
Well, I think of the word team. And, you know, because we didn't have the individual superstars, Mark Howe was one of the best players in the game, and Tim Kerr was one of the best scorers in the game for sure. We had really good players. And, you know, a lot of them have chosen to stay in the game. You think about the guys that are coaching at different levels and have stayed in the game and managing at different levels. And it was a passionate team. It was just such a great mix of different characters. And there were very, very different characters on that team. But if you were putting it together, you had all the right ingredients. And we did get so close. And I think of that game seven, and when it was 1-0, that was a 5-on-3 we'd scored on the front end of it. Now you've still got a power play, but we're playing without Tim Curry. You don't have the best power play goal scorer in the game in that generation. Still holds the individual season record with 34 power play goals in a season. And you don't have him to put out there because he's injured. And then at 1-0, Brian Propp trickles one through Grant Fuhr's legs, and Marty McSorley comes out of nowhere to save a goal. So you had your opportunities within the game, and their superstar, Sean, without question. Their goals were Messier, Curry from Gretzky, and Glenn Anderson. And you know, those guys that I just mentioned, those four guys are all Hall of Famers. And yet, from a team standpoint, that's the question I get asked the most about by other players years later, is how close those teams were and how good those teams were. And to this day, I'll be in a press box somewhere talking to Brownie, and somebody will walk by and say, oh, yeah, the old Flyers. You know, and it's said with so much respect and so much envy, I would say, because guys play their whole career in the NHL and don't play for teams as team-like good as those teams were. And they were that, maybe that's the way to word it. They were team-like good. They were really good teams in every sense. Any definition you can come up with for team, they represented those things.
That was Dave Poulin, and here's former Flyers defenseman Brad Marsh. Moving on to the Cup Final, you're facing Edmonton again for the second time in 3 years. Edmonton's won two of the past 3 years before that season, and you fall behind 3-1 in the series, and you go back there for Game 5. And correct me if I'm wrong, Brad, but I saw somewhere that before Game 5, they had already scheduled the parade in the Edmonton newspapers. Is that true?
I believe so, but, you know, if you think about it, is that was just the City Hall being prepared for what might happen. It was unfortunate that some City Hall staffer leaked it. It's not like, you know, they were doing it because they were overconfident and all that kind of stuff. They were doing it to be ready for what happens in a Stanley Cup parade or a championship parade for that matter. So, you know, I don't think that – I can't remember, to be honest with you, if we were – I don't think it had a bearing on the game. Like, sure, it was talked about, but I don't think it was ever to the point where, oh, those sons of a guns, they're so down and overconfident, let's go stick it to them. No, we still had the mentality – hey, boys, this is a big game. We want to win. We want to take this back to the Spectrum. It was as simple as that. We had a job to do, and whatever City Hall did in Planet and Parade was, in my book anyhow, irrelevant.
And you guys did take care of business. You fell behind 2-0. You came back. Tockett had a huge game, a couple of goals, I think. Propp had 4 assists. And then you're back at Game 6 at the Spectrum. May 28, 1987. It's another comeback. Propp ties it, and then it's another iconic Flyers moment that still sticks in people's heads. J.J. Daigneault, who probably, with no disrespect to J.J. Daigneault, would probably never be brought up in Flyers history if it wasn't for this moment. In fact, I think it was his first. J.J. Daigneault, 5.5 minutes left, hits the game-winning goal, a laser, his first postseason goal, and the Spectrum goes nuts. How loud was it when J.J. Daigneault scored?
Well, it's the loudest, they tell us it's the loudest the Spectrum ever was. It was such an unbelievable moment. It's one of the few times where the team and the fans are celebrating together. It was utter pandemonium. It was just an incredible feeling. And our alumni, our Flyers alumni, you know, we started doing these shows. We call them Flyers Alumni Decades. You know, they're live on YouTube. And last week was our first one. And we talked about the 86-87 hockey team and, of course, the Stanley Cup Finals. And we had, you know, Mark Howe, Davey Poole, and Hexie on, Mark Messier from the Oilers on, and of course we had JJ on, and so it was really cool to get JJ's perspective on the goal, and so it was really neat. And but a funny fact about JJ, yes, it was his first Stanley Cup playoff goal for the Flyers, but JJ went on to play, will have a long career with various teams in the NHL. He scored 5 Stanley Cup playoff overtime goals, 4 of them being game winners. Like, that's an incredible stat for somebody that, you know, we only remember him as the one goal that he scored for the Flyers, but he had an incredible career, and he had a knack of scoring the big goal. But it was really neat to hear his version or his take. But it was, he scored with five and a half minutes, whatever. And, when you're protecting a one-goal lead in any game, let alone a Stanley Cup Finals, that 5.5 minutes seemed like 5.5 hours, and it was an incredible atmosphere, and one that, as a player, we'll never forget, but also Flyer fans have never forgot that.
It's the closest that the Flyers have come to winning the Cup. Since they did win it back in the mid-70s, and credit to JJ for that incredible stat that you brought up about all those Stanley Cup goals that he scored. That's remarkable, and really the shot that he had in 87 was just incredible, and it forced Game 7 back in Edmonton. You guys took a 1-0 lead in that game, first time in the entire series that you scored the first goal, but of course the Oilers won 3-1 despite the fact that Hextall was incredible. Looking back, Brad, is there something different that you think could have been done in that game to maybe make it go the other way?
You know what? I don't think so. The Oilers are a great team. I personally think the best team ever assembled. No disrespect to the Montreal Canadiens faithful who think the Canadiens are the best dynasty. The Islanders won 4 games, 4 Stanley Cups in a row, but the Oilers of the 80s, they changed the way the game of hockey is played with their fast-flowing, freewheeling, move the puck. It was just incredible to play against them. And I remember saying that, to be honest, I think we're a better team. They just have more superstars. And if you look at that team, I believe there's 6 guys in the Hockey Hall of Fame. And Mark Howe was elected, I think, 2 years ago, is our only Hall of Famer. And it was just an incredible team that the Edmonton Oilers scouting staff built with their drafts. And it was just, I think they're the best team. And if you look at the game, yes, we took the lead. And yes, we had some chances maybe to go ahead 2-0. If we would have got a second goal, we might have had a better chance. But second and third period, we weren't in the game. It was Edmonton dominated us. I forget what the shots on net were, but Hexie stood on his head to keep it close. And, the third period, Glenn Anderson stepped over the blue line and scored. And it was, I don't want to say over, like we threw the towel in, but how many times, just even in this interview that you've brought up, you came from behind. It wasn't in the cards for us to come from behind again once Anderson scored.
Last one I have for you, Brad, and I really appreciate all the time that you've given it. I know it's been longer than 20 minutes, as I said it would, so thank you so much. The last one that I have for you is, despite the fact that the Flyers teams of the mid-80s that you were on, 85, 87, those great Flyers teams, those really exciting, really popular Flyers teams, didn't win the Cup, didn't do what the mid-70s Flyers did. You guys are still revered and loved. When you think about those teams, Brad, what sticks out to you?
Well, 85, we were a bunch of kids, as you said right off the get-go. you know, 10 players under the age of 22. But I think it was, we actually had six or seven players under the age of 21. They couldn't drink. And, you know, and we were a young team. We came together. We had a rookie coach, a rookie GM. And those were such great times and great teams, great memories. And I just remember us just always there to answer the bell, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the opponent, regardless of how many injuries our team had, how many obstacles that we had to overcome, specifically, you know, Pelly's unfortunate passing. Like, that was huge as a team. But we came together, and we were very, very successful. Unfortunately, we fell a little bit short, but we were very, very successful despite all the odds that were against us during that four-year span.
Well, I got to admit, Brad, it was fun going back on YouTube and going back to different videos and watching and remembering all those different moments from the Flyers in the 80s. It was a lot of fun, and that's credit to you guys for all those wonderful memories. Thank you, Brad, for the time. I really appreciate it. Stay safe. Best to you and yours. Good luck, continued success with all the different things that the Flyers alumni are doing, which you are the president of, and thanks for the time again. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you, and I'll talk to you soon.
That was Brad Marsh, and now we'll close with Dave Brown. And while we already had an episode on that legendary Flyers brawl with Montreal before Game 6 of the Conference Finals in 87, I did not get a chance to talk to Dave until after the episode was already posted. So I'll lead with that. Dave Brown on the Montreal brawl, and then the J.J. Daniel goal against Edmonton. I'm so happy that I get to talk to you about this next thing. 87 playoffs, Game 6 against Montreal. Claude Lemieux and Shane Corson did the pregame ritual with shooting the pucks in your net before the game. How much did that annoy you, Dave?
It didn't really annoy me all that much, but, like, you know, once it got down towards the end of the series, they kept on talking this thing up. And so, you know, we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know that was going to happen that game, but it just happened that some of our guys kind of had enough of it. And really, you know, when Ed Hospodar and Chico Rush went back out on the ice, even at that time, we didn't think we were going to brawl at that time. But it just progressed into that. I think it was kind of like a ticky-tack thing that they thought that they were going to get in our heads because they were putting the puck in our net and that. And I think some of our guys just got tired of it. And that's what it really progressed into, was the brawl.
Did Keenan want you guys to stay in the locker room and not escalate the thing to what it ended up being?
I don't remember exactly about that. I don't think... You know, if our guys were out on the ice, we were gonna go out there and take care of them. So I don't think once it got to the point where we had guys out on the ice, we were gonna go out there. They weren't gonna be able to stop us do that. So no, that was our own initiative to go out there.
How much of the bad blood from that fight carried over into Game 6?
Well, I mean, I was fighting with Chris Nyland. We must have fought for like. Not straight, but it stretches probably for 20 minutes. And I was pretty exhausted by the time that brawl was over. But I think in the end of it, I think it gave us a huge edge in the game. And I think that's ultimately why we closed them out that night.
And then you moved on to the Cup Finals to face Edmonton. They took a 3-1 lead. But before Game 5, they had the city of Edmonton had the parade scheduled in the newspaper. How much did Mike Keenan use that as a motivator for Game 5?
Well, you know, I don't remember exactly about, you know, what happened there. But overall, us as a team, if I can remember right at that time, we're just thinking, you know what, we just wanted to win one period, win the second period, third period, and so on, and just take little bites of it. Don't take the whole thing all at once, and we could have a chance to climb back into it. I mean, we just need to try and claw back into it, and that's what we did when we won that fifth game, that we got ourselves back in the series.
And you sent it back to the Spectrum for Game 6, May 28th, 1987, 33 years ago. J.J. Daniels' game-winning goal late in the third period to send the thing back to Edmonton. What was it like to be in the Spectrum at that moment?
Yeah, that was probably the loudest I'd ever heard the building myself in my playing career there. It was absolutely crazy. And just the atmosphere, everything bring the hair up on your back. It was just kind of like a magical moment, because then we really knew that we had a chance to, to take it to a game seven there. I think there was still like, 5 or 6 minutes left. I don't know when he scored. I think there's a little over 5 minutes left in the period when he scored. So we really, once we got the lead, like, we were so good defensively that if we got a lead, like, with that much time left, we were pretty tough to beat.
Do you remember how it all worked out with, we obviously see the play of JJ getting it at the blue line and firing it towards the net, and it's somehow finding a way to get in there. Do you remember how it all set up for that? Was he on the bench before, or was he trying to go back to the bench and Keenan said, stay in the game? Do you remember the events leading up to the goal?
I remember seeing a tape of him saying that Keenan told him to stay out there. And I remember just before that, Messier had a couple good chances down at our end, and then the play went down to the other end, and somehow the puck was, I think they were trying to clear the puck, and it bounced off the boards, and JJ happened to be coming in from the left point, and he just put it on, he put it on the net with a slap shot. And I think it even, I think Brian Propp maybe was close to tipping it, but he didn't. They awarded JJ the goal. But yeah, I think Keenan told JJ to stay out there or something, or he might have been on a prolonged shift or something like that, but he happened to be the guy that put it in the net, and we were very happy for that.
What was the flight like going to Edmonton for Game 7 after that Game 6 win? Were you guys just on cloud 9 thinking that you couldn't be touched, that there was no way that Edmonton could win this series after the rally that you guys made to force a seventh game?
No, I knew it was gonna. I didn't feel like that. I thought there was still a lot of urgency. We knew it was gonna be an extremely tough game to beat them. I think we were just, for me, I was just on edge. I knew that we had a lot of work to do, and that we didn't really. We did have some momentum, but we knew that they were a great team, and that we were gonna have to be very. Really ready to play the next game.
You took the lead early in Game 7, and Hextall was excellent, but the Oilers won the game 3-1, late goal in the end by Glenn Anderson, put the thing away, kind of. How much does that game still eat at you, Dave, that you guys came that close to winning the Cup that year?
Oh, I know. That's tough to take. Even now, it's a kick in the gut. We came so close to beating one of the best teams ever, and we came up a little bit short. So that's hard to take. That would have been, who knows what it would have been. But, they were just a little bit better than us, and they won the series. I have to give them credit that they were the better team, but not by much.
Well, it was an outstanding series, and you guys deserve a lot of credit for that. You guys deserve a lot of credit for the great hockey that you gave this city in the mid-80s. Even though, as you said, those teams came up short, you guys were very popular and so revered. Why do you think that was in Philadelphia?
Well, I don't think we were an old... We did have some great players on the team, but I wouldn't say that we had the kind of skill level that the Oilers had. We were more a workman-type team that played very good defensively. We were tough. We competed. And I think probably one of the things that I could take away from it the most is we were one of the hardest-working teams that I'd ever played with. So I think that's really what made our team what we were. We worked hard every night, and we came to work. And, there's not too much replacement for hard work. If you have a group of guys that are pulling all in the same direction, you're going to have a pretty good formula there, at least a good start to having a good team.
Dave, last one I have for you. Now, as you're at the head pro scout of the Flyers, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about this current team. Why do you think that they were able to really click and go on a roll before everything stopped?
I think there was the potential for having a great chemistry in the room. It seemed to be the last little while that they believe that they can win because of all the things that have evolved throughout the year.
I think they enjoy playing with each other. The coach has made a huge difference, and I think the chemistry, and I think we had the players there. We just had to kind of find the right mix in that, and I think they believe that they can win games against anybody now.
Dave, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it. I hope you stay safe and well during this time.
All right, Dave, thank you.
And that was former Flyer and current head pro scout Dave Brown. Thank you for listening to another episode of Philly Sports Playback on the KYW Sports Pod. Stay safe, stay well.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.